music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good Wednesday morning to you. My name is Robin. I am here with you live and your host for today's show. We broadcast on the unceded and ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh people, and want to take a moment and recognize the stewardship over time that allows us to be in this beautiful, beautiful place. On today's show, I have an interview that I did a little while back, pre-recorded for you, with Rita Sorensen, who works for or on behalf of kids who are in the care of the child family system, child family welfare system, and tries to find them forever homes. And we talk about the challenges, but also the importance of that in terms of, you know, providing people with the supports that they need to have a good future. Before we get to that, though, I just want to flag your attention. I know that, you know, so much of our attention, especially in the social media world these days, has been, you know, in terms of women's issues, looking towards the Southern friends and their struggle with what's happening in terms of abortion rights and the Roe versus Wade. But here in Canada, I think we need to turn some attention and look at what's happening at the Supreme Court level and this judgment that is putting into place a defense that allows for voluntary intoxication to the point of automatism to be allowed in cases where there is violent crime, sexual assault, up to homicide. And we can only, you know, in some cases, women and children are going to be at the brunt of this. And so this isn't a new thing. It's been something that's, you know, kind of tossed around on the books since 1995. But it has come up again. And the Supreme Court has deemed it in violation of people's rights if they cannot use this as a defense, which is really where the problem stems from, right? It's like, if you're voluntarily getting so intoxicated that you have no control over your behavior and can use that as a defense, then that is really, really, you know, there's some issues there about what that means for other people's safety. So there's a bunch of news articles that are talking about that, but I think something that in Canada we need to be paying attention to in terms of our own level of awareness and what's happening in terms of regulations. We're going to hear a song to get us sort of in the mood for this this conversation that I had with Rita Sorensen. This is one of my favorite singers, Dolly Parton, and a track called Home. And then we'll jump right into the interview here on Intravenous.
Looking out of my window pane, tears mingling with the rain. I'm so lonesome I could cry just like old Hank. Staring down on the city street, feeling empty and incomplete. There's a place I need to be to fill my tank. A place I can go where I can be free, where I can be happy. I had a lot of ambitious dreams. Seen a lot of those dreams come true. I had good love. I ain't complaining, that's for sure. I got a lot to be thankful for. One of those things is a magic door that opens up. Back to the time when I was a kid. To the sounds of the crickets and the Kennedys.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus and Community Radio from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded, unsurrendered territory of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I am Robin Erickson, and I am joined on Zoom by Rita Sorensen. And for more than 30 years, Rita has worked on behalf of abused, neglected, and vulnerable children, providing leadership for local, state, and national efforts, working to improve the juvenile justice and child welfare systems, while striving to ensure a safe and permanent home for North America's children. Leading the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, a national nonprofit public charity since 2001, and the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption Canada since 2004, Ms. Sorensen works to find adoptive families for the more than 150,000
I wish it was the smaller number. 150,000 children waiting in North America's foster care system. Under her leadership, the foundation has significantly increased its grant making while developing strategic initiatives that act on the urgency of the issue. Ms. Sorensen is a nationally recognized child welfare advocate. She has testified before the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee on the importance of foster care adoption, requested national speaker on the topics of children and the child welfare system and social innovation. Ms. Sorensen has been a featured presenter at events for Adoption Exchange Association, Center for Adoption Support and Education, Children's Home Society of America, National Association of County Commissioners, National CASA Association, and National Council for Adoption, among others. And so we are going to learn about adoption and the plight of these many, many, many juvenile folks in our community who kind of get stranded in a way. So welcome to the show and thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Robin, for having me. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Before we get right into, talking about the issues exactly, let's start out with a bit of a 101 on adoption, because there are numerous sort of avenues into adoption. And what can you tell us about that?
There are, and we think of them really in three categories, although there are a couple of others as well. The first three major categories, when people say the word adoption, what do we immediately think? Typically, we immediately think about domestic infant adoption. So a family that either can't conceive a child biologically or doesn't choose to, seeks out a private means through an agency or an individual in order to adopt an infant. So that's one means. Another means is an international adoption. Whether it's an infant or an older child, people choose to look across countries and adopt internationally. And then there's that third major bucket of adoption, and it's the one that the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption focuses on. Those children who have been abused or neglected, that abuse has risen to such a level that they've entered a foster care system. It's wound its way through the process of being in foster care to the point of a judge decides that this child cannot go home, that the home cannot be safe enough for that child to go home. And so becomes a ward of the province, of the community, is freed from that biological family and is now essentially a legal orphan in Canada and the United States. And so those children are waiting to be adopted by another family to step forward and care for them. There's, of course, step-parent adoptions and kinship family adoptions for whatever reasons that might happen within a family. But it's those three broad categories that are very different and different processes, different motivations, perhaps, for people to jump into that system. For us, that foster care piece is in Canada right now. And it's very hard to keep a hold of statistics because the statistics are held provincially, not with a national overlay. But there are about anywhere between 30 and 35,000 children in Canada today who are in that status. They are no longer a legal part of their biological family, and they're simply waiting for an adoptive family. And so that's where a lot of this conversation today will focus. But I think the distinctions between the kinds of adoptions are important because there are cost differences, there are process differences, there are different ways in which though each one is approached and the timelines that it takes to finalize an adoption. So it's important to understand the distinctions between them all.
And you're right, you know, we think about adoptions mostly in that, people are either unable to conceive a child and so they're adopting from birth, or, we hear a lot about international adoption processes, but the other ones are news to me.
Yeah, we don't hear as much about it, do we? And that's part of the mission, but behind the foundation is first elevating awareness about these children who are simply waiting for the birthright of every other child, a safe family and a home. And then beginning to dispel some of the myths and misperceptions that surround them, address the realities of the challenges of walking into a government system to think about an adoption and the long-term impact on society itself if we don't accomplish this and if we do.
Right, yeah. You know, your bio lays out, and you also just spoke to where your niche is in the adoption world. But I'm curious how you landed in that niche. But also, maybe the what that really elevates to you, you know, and how that fits in to the other layers.
That's a great question. And people often ask, well, did you jump into this because you were adopted or because you have adopted? And neither one of those have happened in my life. But what did happen is that I was one of those kids that probably to the dismay of my parents came out kicking and screaming, that's not fair, when it particularly came to children. Somehow I've just always had this eye on what's fair for children. Or, you know, those comments that parents will make, well, you'll understand when you're older. The reality is at my age, and it's fairly advanced, I still think the way that I did when I was 8 or 9 or 10 about a lot of these issues. So I think I was just a natural child advocate at heart. But I went through a series of other things in my life. And when my first daughter was born, there was a horrendous case of abuse in my community, and the infant passed away as a result of that abuse. I was tuned to that at that point in my life. This, again, that sort of, that's not fair, but more deeply than that, I felt it at a personal level. How could this happen? What goes so wrong that this happens in a family? So I began volunteering at a local child abuse prevention agency. How is it that we can keep this from happening? We shouldn't let families move into child welfare systems, if at all possible. What supports do they need? What are the issues that drive a family to this, not necessarily this extreme always, but what drive families to neglect or abuse their children, whether it's issues of poverty or substance abuse or legacies of family violence, you know, young parents that just don't have the support systems around them and don't understand the needs of children at different stages in life. So began that. That turned into really an intensive period of learning all about those strategies of child abuse prevention and how we can address that. And moved into, later on, I had the opportunity to move into what's called the Court-Appointed Special Advocates Program in the U.S., but it's a volunteer-driven program where volunteers act as best interest advocates for children once they're involved in court proceedings and keep eyes on the entire system, make recommendations to judges about what's best for this child. Shall we send this child home? Shall we free this child for adoption? Shall we continue to provide more services? So learned more from that systemic viewpoint of what happens to children and families when they then become enmeshed and involved. And it's the same in Canada, in those very complex legal and justice systems, and sometimes can just feel lost in those systems, the children certainly, but the families too. And then had the opportunity, was there for almost a decade, had the opportunity to move into this position and move from an all nonprofit, non-governmental organizations, but had the opportunity to move into a foundation, nonprofit, a foundation that provides resources to organizations that focuses exclusively on those children who now have gone through that whole cycle from prevention to intervention. Those activities have failed on behalf of that child, failed in the sense of that child now doesn't have a permanent home. And so how do we make sure that those children have the chance for a permanent loving home? The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption was founded by Dave Thomas, who also created the Wendy's company, the square hamburgers and frosty milkshakes that is known internationally and certainly has a strong presence in Canada as well. But he was adopted. And so as he was moving toward the end of his career at the Wendy's company, wanted to really put in place what was in the DNA of the company, which was giving back to communities, but do it in a more strategic way. Created the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption in 1992 to then focus exclusively on this conversation across North America about how do we elevate the awareness of children in foster care, elevate the awareness of children in foster care waiting to be adopted, enhance that a robust policy and practice and community conversation on behalf of children and families, and really start hopefully moving the needle so that children who are in care, who too often linger in care their entire childhoods or too much of their childhoods, and then leave the system without a family. So it's been that sort of serendipitous, maybe planned journey for me. It wasn't what I thought of when I was at university, that this is exactly what I want to do, but it became that evolution of who I was as a person that turned into this incredible opportunity to have these positions to advance what I think are at a certain level the email rights, the basic rights of children.
Mm-hmm. Just as you're speaking, I'm thinking that there might be some confusion between what the foster care system offers and what adoption provides. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. And there's a profound and basic difference. The foster care system was set up to be a temporary placement for children who are in difficult circumstances with a family, difficult to the level that they cannot be safe with that family for a period of time. But it's the job of the professionals in the system to find out what's needed by this family so this child can be back home. I believe, and the system believes fervently, that children belong with their families of origin. They belong in the community with whom they identify, in the culture with whom they identify. And to rip a child from a family and place them in a foster care should be an extreme act. It shouldn't be the first step in helping a family move forward. So it was set up as a temporary placement. But again, for those children, those 30,000 in Canada, for whom they could not go home, then the system, the foster care system, becomes that movement toward permanency, toward an adoptive family. And that's what adoption can provide for both a child and a family, different things, right? For the child, it's that sense of who's still suffering from trauma, from grief and loss, but become a safe haven of family and home. For the family that's adopting, we know from research that we do that families who step forward into the foster care system do it because they want to help a child in need. It's a very altruistic step. But it's also combined with this notion of I can increase or start a family in this unique way and not only help my community and a child, but I can also then bonus have an incredible family at the end of the day. So it's this combination of understanding the foster care system is meant to be temporary. For too many children, it becomes permanent. In Canada, anywhere between 5 and 7,000 children each year turn 18 or 21 or whatever that age is based on the province and leave foster care without that promise that we made to them. They leave without a family. We also know from research that there are negative outcomes for those children, not because they're bad kids, but because they don't have that safety net that surrounds them. They can't make a mistake at age 18 or 19. Their car breaks down. They can't get to work. They lose their job. Suddenly they're homeless. So there's high incidences of homelessness, of unemployment, of early parenting, substance abuse, re-involvement in government systems for those children who leave foster care without a permanent family. So it then becomes this, you know, what does adoption not only give to the child, but to the family, but to the community, this sense of we can't build safe and thriving communities if we have children who are at risk as young adults in in all of those potential negative consequences.
Thank you. It makes me think of two things. You know, here in British Columbia, Vancouver specifically, there was an art project not too long ago called the 19th Birthday Party. Mm-hmm. And it was specifically to bring awareness of that exact issue that you speak about, where, you know, kids are aging out of care. And with that sort of milestone,
yes,
they're graduating into this life of precarity that is not the same for other folks who are turning 19 in the same, you know, they don't have the same experience as their peers who are turning 19, who have families in that same way.
That's exactly it. And I think there's this sort of mistaken notion or this attitude that we see across North America of, well, it's okay. You know, they'll be fine. They're survivors. They'll pull themselves up by their bootstraps and they'll be fine, because we see examples of that typically, you know, very public examples of that. And yet when we think about biological children, we wouldn't expect that of them. We don't say, okay, off you go. You can't come home. We won't help you if something happens. You don't have any place to stay with us. That's not, you know, so there's this disparity of attitudes toward children in foster care and what that means, and biological children. And so our job is to shift that thinking, shift that narrative that says, these are not, you know, Dave Thomas always said, these children are not someone else's responsibility. They're our responsibility. These aren't just someone else's children. Oh, those kids over there. These are all collectively our children that have the same needs and wishes and desires and hopes and dreams of any other child. They've just had a really rough start in life. And so if anything, our efforts should be elevated on their behalf and accelerated on their behalf, rather than mired in, you know, policy arguments and financial need. And we just can't think about it today. We've got so many more pressing issues. They should be top of the agenda.
And that's the second thing that it made me think about, was this sort of phrase that's being bandied around a lot lately, especially with the onset of COVID and living through that, this idea of the community of care. And, you know, what does that look like? And what does it mean? And to whom does it mean anything? And who ultimately is responsible, yeah, to create that community of care? And, you know, what can we see as examples of that?
Exactly. And that it's a very relevant conversation. I think the COVID and the pandemic really highlighted the circumstances that these children and families were in, because when you're further isolated from connectivity, when you're further isolated from school, where frequently that sometimes for these children, that's their only access into caring adults until something happens, you know, in a big way, and maybe again, then become a part of a foster care system. So that further isolation of need, or for those children who are already in care or were in group homes, you know, had an elevated risk of COVID because their systems are compromised because of the trauma in their lives. And then, right, what happens during COVID? It's time for you to leave care. Well, I can't. What do you mean leave care? You know, everyone else has a safe haven. I don't have a safe haven to go to. Or they're at university and it's break time, and I don't have a place to go because I don't have a family to go home to during the breaks. And so it's all of that. Understanding where that community of care can step in, should step in, and should be sustained and systemic on behalf of these children and families.
Sounds like a lot of work to be done, right?
It is. It is, but it's doable. We know it's doable. Yeah.
And that leads me to my next question, which is, what are some of the biggest challenges in your work?
Yeah, it's a great question. And for us, as we're trying to shift that narrative, then the myths and misperceptions that surround children and systems is a big one. Because if in the public's heart of heart, they believe that these children aren't worth their effort, then we're not going to move anywhere. And what we know from research that we've just recently released, that 51% of Canadians believe that children are in foster care because they've done something wrong. Literally, that they are juvenile delinquents. Well, if that's a belief system that we bring to the table, then we're not going to work to change policy and practice to get them adopted. We think somehow they've deserved this lot in life, as opposed to they've entered care through absolutely no fault of their own. They've been abused or neglected, no matter what their age is, no matter how they identify themselves, no matter what their journey through foster care has been, they're there through no fault of their own. And so we need to meet them on that journey and get them into a permanent home. So it's those misperceptions. We also know from the research that, and we talked early on about the different kinds of adoption, one of the major differences in the kinds of adoption is that cost difference. So to adopt an infant domestically or adopt an infant or a child internationally can be very expensive, upwards to $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000, depending on what's happening. Now, I always hesitate saying this because I don't want to devalue the life of a child in foster care. But because it's a government system and the government handles all of the processes and the needs of the child, to adopt from foster care essentially costs nothing. And there are typically financial assistance strategies that follow these children. So I think what so that's by long way of introduction to say what we learned from research is Canadians believe, because we hear that big price tag for international or domestic infant adoption, that we believe all adoptions are expensive and so may self-select out of the adoption process simply because of cost, when it's possible to adopt from foster care without incurring a $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 price tag. Now, that's not to say it doesn't cost something to raise children, of course, but that's an eyes wide open for any parent that's beginning that process of raising a family. And then that other piece is there's a fear that parents will come back to try and claim these children. So if I adopt from foster care, I don't want to deal with the family challenging me in court to regain custody of these children. That cannot happen. Once a child is legally severed from their family of origin, that's permanent, and the family can't try to reclaim that child. Having said that, it's important to understand that depending on the age of the child, they are still feeling grief and loss, no matter what happened in their lives, from that family that they were born to. They may still identify, and certainly do identify with that family or extended family members. So it's up to the adoptive family. No, they can't be challenged legally for custody of this child, but it's up to the adoptive family to decide who among the extended family members would be safe for this child, because it's important for that child to maintain that identity, if at all possible. So those are getting over some of those myths and misperceptions about the system, the children involved in the system, and the process. The reality is it is a government process, and so it can be difficult, or it can appear difficult. But there are lots of government systems with which we interact that are difficult, right? Or that can be challenging. So our job is to sort of separate from, well, because this is about those children, it's going to be too difficult for me to engage in a government system. And perhaps flip that a little bit and say, because it is a government system and it may be challenging for the child, it's my responsibility to jump in and help make that easier for the child. I think those are some of the challenges that we encounter in selling this notion that adoption from foster care, not that we would ever dissuade anyone from an infant adoption. If that's what they want, we celebrate that every day. And when those adoptions finalize, we believe that every child without a family deserves one. But we also want to celebrate and encourage that while you're thinking about adoption, understand that there are three kinds and equally assess what might be available to you, what might be best for your family, rather than disregarding the foster care adoption notion.
Yeah, I hear a big education piece there. You know, whenever we're challenged to get over sort of myths and misperceptions that we hold, and those ideas and values about things, especially when it's so, as you say, you know, it encompasses sort of a social blanket. If it's 51%, that's a big number.
It's a big one to step over. And at one level, I kind of understand that, because look, think about going to a gathering tonight with adults who have all kinds of children in their lives. But as soon as someone starts talking about the teenagers in their life, what happens to faces in the room, right? Those who have shared experiences, eyes are rolled and frowns happen. And then the horror stories of what's going on with the teenager in their life start dancing around the room. I get that. That's what teenagers are, right? They're supposed to be oppositional. They're supposed to be defiant. They're supposed to be on that quest for freedom and leaving home. That's how they grow and develop. And frequently that comes out in ways that are challenging for parents. But when you add that, so that notion of teens, just, you know, in thriving biological families, you add that layer of trauma and mistrust and grief and loss that teens in the foster care system are feeling, you add the perhaps racial injustices that they've encountered, or the fastly held belief systems that they have to encounter either from workers or adults that they deal with. You add to that the fact they may have moved from foster home to foster home and changed schools 5 or 6 or 7 times in their lives. You bet there may be some behaviors that surface at some point with this child. Of course there are. So it's about understanding both the ages and stages of normal child development, but also what are the dynamics of abuse and neglect? What has this child experienced that might cause some, what an adult would perceive as a negative behavior, but what someone who understands where this child has been can understand it's a natural reaction to the trauma they've experienced in their life. And so we see this too in the research that we've done. 60% of Canadians prefer, when asked what age child would you prefer to adopt, 60% say they would prefer to adopt a child age 5 or younger. And only 3% would prefer to adopt a child age 13 or older. So that becomes not only, it's one of those challenges we talked about earlier. So we bring people to the table, we talk about foster care, we get them interested in foster care, but they don't have a tendency to consider adopting an older child. And by older, we mean 8 and above, because we know from research that the day a child turns 9 in foster care, they're available to be adopted. Their likelihood of being adopted decreases clearly, significantly, when we see these preferences of the public about who they would like to adopt. So that's part of that education process too. Well, who might be interested in adopting a teen? Perhaps it's not a young person who's thinking about a family for the first time and really is committed to raising an infant, but perhaps a family that's already raised children, or a single parent that has delayed parenting, or a same-sex couple who has delayed parenting and wants to adopt, you know, and certainly anyone can come to the table, but understanding that for the most part, about half of the children waiting in care are age 8 or older. And so that doesn't fall within that preference that we learn from Canadians about a younger child. So how do we make sure that those begin to line up too, so that we can guarantee that children don't age out of foster care?
I'm curious to know if you see a quote unquote typical Canadian family and how that idea of a typical Canadian family is reflected in the adoption world.
I don't think any longer there's a typical Canadian family. I think families are as diverse as the children who are in the system waiting for them. So again, single parent adoptions, same sex couple adoptions, older parent adoptions. So grandparents raising grandchildren and moving to adopt, guardianship, where a family legally takes charge of a child but may not move to adoption. So there's just the face of adoption is I think something to be celebrated, because it really brings this notion of diversity to the table, certainly across religious adoption, across culture adoption. Now, again, that's a little bit with that caution that we want children to be able to identify with their family of origin, their culture of origin. But if that's not possible, we can certainly look at how do we bring a blend of family and still respect who that child is and make sure that they can maintain connections to, robust connections to who they are across culture, across religion. LGBTQ children are at such a high risk of being booted out of their homes, of becoming homeless, simply because of whom they are. So stepping forward and embracing those children for whom they are and bringing them into families as well. Mm.
You know, that gives a good sort of basis in terms of how we see attitudes have changed in regards to, you know, who's even allowed to adopt these days, because it used to be very heteronormative. And, you know, if you weren't a man and a woman in a traditional marriage with a white picket fence, there was no way, Jose, you know. And what else can you say about how the attitudes are changing, and, you know, what direction that might be heading in?
We were really excited when every 5 years we do attitudes research in the United States and Canada. So U.S. Attitudes toward foster care and foster care adoption, and Canadian attitudes toward foster care and foster care adoption. And we've been doing it since 2001, but really benchmarking it since 2007. So we can really have a sense of trends in attitudes. And we were really excited. We weren't sure, because it's an online survey of over 1,000 Canadians with a diverse population background. We weren't sure, since it occurred during COVID, how that might slant attitudes or perceptions or how people were thinking about things. And we really won't know if there was a difference until we do it in a couple more years when we're post-pandemic, to see if that was what we came up with was an anomaly. But here's what we learned: that 32% of Canadians have considered adoption in general. That doesn't seem like a lot, but that's an increase of 6% over the last time that we did this survey, statistically very significant. And of those people who have considered adoption, 73% have thought about and considered foster care adoption. That's an increase of 15%, a huge increase. So I think the awareness is there. It's beginning to get there, not just with the work of the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, but other organizations, the media, the robust conversations, I think particularly in the last 5 or 6 years that have happened in all provinces, but particularly in certainly in BC and Ontario and some of the larger provinces, very robust policy changes and conversations. That's huge to us. And it's really, I think, exciting for us to see that if that consideration is there, then what do we need to do next to move people from consideration to action? One of our biggest calling cards has been this notion that every child is adoptable. No child is unadoptable. Because there was a belief, and in social worker files, we would frequently see this child is unadoptable. Let's help them age out of care. We'll give them the resources. And they would say they were unadoptable because they had special needs, or they were in a large sibling group, or they were 16 or 17 years old. And so our battle cry from the foundation has always been every child is adoptable. So we asked that question as well. And 67% of Canadians believe that every child is adoptable. That's an increase of nearly 10% since the last time we did the survey. That helps us get over our earlier conversation, what are the barriers? That belief that some children are simply unadoptable. Well, if we're moving the attitudes a little bit, and in this case, a fairly strong way, then we can begin to break down those barriers. And then I think one more thing that's worth noting, 75% of Canadians believe that we should be doing more. As a nation, as a province, as a community, we should be doing more to encourage foster care adoption, whatever that means. We didn't ask specifically, what do you mean by that? Just the general question. That's an uptick of 11%. So lots of good news, I think, about where we're pushing that needle, but or moving the needle, apologies. But that's countered by then those challenges we already saw, that the preference for older youth. Even though, I think 81% of Canadians said that aging out is a large societal issue. They understand that there are consequences to allowing a child to age out. That's big too, that's huge. And yet 42% also said, but there are many more pressing societal issues than a child aging out of care. I think I understand that in the context of COVID, in the context of an economy, of economic issues, of health issues. So that one I'll be interested to see in a few more years. If we keep it up in a high percentage of saying it's a large societal issue, and perhaps it's also it is a pressing issue, that it doesn't get overrated by something else.
I can't help but think of how intersectionality needs to become part of the conversation with this, because yes, we have economic issues that are pressing, and we have climate issues that are pressing, and we have a pandemic issue that is pressing, and we have an opioid issue that is pressing, and we have a need for affordable housing that is pressing, and the list really does go on and on, right? But if we connect the dots in a way that is more meaningful, to see how one impacts on another and how that impacts when you connect them in. I know there's a kids game where you have the hub and the sticks and you can make these shapes. And, part of kids aging out of care is within that matrix of all of those issues that are pressing,
exactly,
right? And when we silo or compartmentalize any of these issues, we're losing the whole complexity of the story.
That's exactly it. And at a cost effectiveness level alone, I always hesitate about talking about it this way, but there is a return on investment to communities, to getting these children out of care and into safe and loving families. We know that the cost to society for homelessness, for being undereducated, being unemployed, becoming early parents, moving into the juvenile justice or adult justice systems, those become huge costs, the financial cost to society, that can be diverted very easily, very quickly, by not allowing 7,000 or 8,000, 9,000 children year over year over year to age out of care. And you're right, that's where that intersectionality becomes just critical, to be able to see that one has impact on the other. It's not so much a domino effect as it is exactly that, and a linkage effect. And it's not, is it going to solve every issue? No, but it certainly helps with so many of the complexities that we're all faced with every day. And this one, again, it's not easily solvable, but there is a sense of, this is something we could all do. We could all consider becoming foster parents. We could all consider becoming adoptive parents. Not all of us can do it, but we could all consider volunteering with an agency, mentoring a child that's in care. Talking about it wherever you're gathered, whether it's with your faith community or your business community, or with elected officials, finding a way to get involved in the conversation may feel a little less daunting than saying, how do I help, save the world from climate disaster? So it becomes much more personal, I think, other than perhaps don't use those plastic bags. That's one thing. But this way, it directly and immediately impacts another human.
What do you hope for the future?
It's a great question. You know, I would hope that when we talk about foster care and foster care children and foster care adoption, that people say it with understanding and with the grace for these children and with a commitment to trying to make a difference. And that we, you know, I was talking to someone last week and he said, really, this is about in business, whether it's for profit or not for profit, we're always looking at the bigger numbers, right? How many children did we help get adopted today? How many children are in care? For us, the goal is zero. Zero children waiting in care, zero children waiting, aging out of foster care. So the goal is getting to zero for a change rather than getting to that high number. But it's really, really at the face of it is, look, home is where we all want to be at the end of the day. When we're done with this interview or done with the end of the day, we want to go home and think, oh, did I forget something? Oh, no, I shouldn't have said it that way. And I can share with someone in my family what I was thinking, and they'll say, ah, I'm sure you were fine. I'm sure you were great. Just that kind of support that we all long for as homing pigeons at heart, that we deny that to 7,000 or 8,000 children a year in Canada is just simply unacceptable. And so my hope is that we believe that not only in our hearts, but in our public actions, so that every child can have a safe, permanent home, no matter what brings them into care. It shouldn't be the system itself that keeps them in care.
Yeah, that sense of belonging, right? Mm. And having even more so than the sense of home, ideally, you know, that yeah. Place that is home is that place of belonging, but how that truly gets reflected in our lives. Exactly. How can people find out more? Where can people go to get more information on adoption and foster care adoption and all the things?
Absolutely. Certainly a good place to start is DaveThomasFoundation.ca. We've got a beginner's guide to adoption that they can download, or we can send a hard copy to and can learn all kinds of information. They can also see stories of families who have come together in Canada through foster care adoption. Some really heartwarming and compelling stories. Again, I think when we see others that have stepped forward and done this and they look just like us, they feel just like us, then it becomes a little less daunting. Oh, I think maybe I can do that. If my neighbor did that, I can do that. Shows like this that simply talk about it help. But I think that's a good place to start on the website. Certainly folks can call us at 1-800-ASK-DTFA if they'd rather talk to someone directly. We have a program across Canada called Wendy's Wonderful Kids, where we work with adoption agencies, provide the funds to hire full-time adoption professionals that work on behalf of some of the longest waiting children in that community. It's an evidence-based program. We've finalized more than 500 adoptions across Canada through this program. And those are the children who were most likely to age out of care, sibling groups, teenagers, children with special needs. There's a map on the site, and we can connect folks to those agencies if they want to get directly connected to an agency. There are lots and lots of good agencies across Canada. We're not connected to all of them, but at least this smaller group of agencies are ones that we've vetted, that we work with, that we know and trust. And so we can connect folks to those agencies. It can be daunting to go on the web and just type in foster care adoption, and you'll be inundated with lots of information. But we can certainly direct folks to the organizations and agencies, both national agencies and provincial, that we've worked with, that we know and trust, and where they can get more information as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I've learned a heap load of information about this topic. Before we end off, I want to leave you with the last word in case there's anything that's sort of hanging that we haven't covered or that's burning there.
I think we've talked about so much, and I so appreciate the conversation. Again, just that, you know, that notion that every child is worthwhile. Every child should be valued. If we suspend judgment about why families come into care and really look at what is best for this child, then we will have done an incredible amount of work before we get into the process of adopting, to make sure that every child, not just some children, but every child has the chance for a safe, loving, and permanent home. I'm just grateful for the opportunity to talk to you today. It's been great.
Oh, thank you so much. Rita Sorensen has been my guest today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Last night I had the exact same dream as you. I killed a bird to save your life, and you gave me your shoes. You said, clip my wings and walk my miles, and I said I would too. Then I woke up, but I wasn't gonna tell you. Today I sang the same damn tune as you. It was Lady in Red, I hate that song, and I know you do too. You didn't catch me singing alone, but I always sing with you, nice and quietly, 'cause I don't wanna stop you. I know I could be spending a little too much time with you, but time and too much don't belong together. Don't know why. I probably didn't want to scare you. I know I could be spending a little too much time with you, but time and too much don't belong together like we do. If I had all my yesterdays, I'd give them to you too. I belong to you. I belong to you. I'm gonna die the exact same day as you. On the Golden Gate Bridge, I'll hold your hand and howl at the moon. Scrape the sky with tired eyes, and I will come find you. And I ain't scared, 'cause I'm never gonna miss you. I belong to you.